Good morning.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
A little frustrated. It's been an important week for us, and it's just been challenging to say the least. But I'm getting through it. I've got you, and I've got one more to do, and the show's in the can. But man, cell phones breaking, and they can't get a replacement, and doctor's appointments and tooth extract. I mean, just crazy. But
wow.
I really appreciate your helping me out here, and thank you so much for us doing this again. So what we're going to do is, first thing we're going to do is a short acknowledgement of the show and what you think of it and what we're trying to do, and then we're going to do the first segment, which is what we did the day before yesterday or whenever it was. We talk about depression and anxiety and the significant increase because of the result of coronavirus and economy and everything else. And then the second segment, we're going to talk about your practice and then the association that you started. Okay?
Great. Yep. Sounds good.
You ready? All right. You ready?
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Start the clock. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us today on this anniversary show is probably the single guest who's been on more than anybody else, and that's Dr. Jordan Tischler, our cannabis doctor on call. He has a wealth of knowledge, and what's amazing about Dr. Tischler is that he speaks in English, which is very important. And he has a message for our listeners about his experience with the show. Doctor, go right ahead.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on again. And I have to say that it's been an amazing year. And congratulations to you and your staff on putting together such a wonderful resource. And I'm just grateful and honored to be a part of it.
Thank you so much. Now, the CDC just reported that the percentage of people in this country that are suffering from anxiety and depression is now 25%. They're talking about the coronavirus and being sequestered and out of a job or trying to work remotely from home. So anxiety and depression, big problem. But
absolutely,
it's an important part of your practice. Tell us about what's going on with this anxiety and the depression and how you're helping people.
Well, I have to say that I'm quite surprised by that CDC report. I haven't really dug into how they come up with those numbers. But it is a shockingly high percentage. And one that I think that, you know, that our medical system is going to be taxed to deal with. And clearly, you know, we've been so focused on the acute effects of this virus that we're going to spend a lot of time digging out from all of the consequences of this virus, including, as you point out, the anxiety and depression component. And certainly over the last few months in my practice, we've seen this come up a lot. I mean, we always treated a lot of folks for anxiety and depression, but the current circumstances, as you point out, and the CDC point out, are really exacerbating things. And we've got to get a good handle on this. You know, I think one of the most important things that we have to understand about anxiety and depression is, you know, that some of this stuff is situational, and hopefully that gets better. But that when it comes to cannabis medicine, it can be helpful. But it's also important for us to understand that sort of not just any approach to cannabis medicine will do. And in fact, sort of the common knowledge approach, which is, you know, I might sort of glibly say, you know, whenever you get to feeling anxious or down, you just smoke some weed and deal with it that way. We actually know from a number of studies over the years that approach can be counterproductive. It can actually make the anxiety and depression worse. not to mention interfere with activities of daily life and productivity at work and all of those sorts of things, learning at school. So when we think about using cannabis in a sort of clinically proven and best practices way, what we find that works best is very low dose and given typically in the evening or before bed so that the intoxication phase, right, the getting high that comes with cannabis, actually wears off during the evening or over the course of the night, and yet the effect of taking that cannabis dose persists throughout the next day, controlling the anxiety and the depression. And that's a very successful model, but it's not the one that you kind of hear about from your friends or from the dispensary. And what we know, of course, is that the higher dose and the daytime use models that are more commonly discussed are actually more harmful than beneficial. So, you know, we really need to get that word out there, particularly as people are suffering so much, that this can be helpful, but that we have to do it with care and thought and attention to the detail so that it doesn't end up becoming a problem in its own right.
Well, thank you for that. And it's one of the reasons why I have you on the show, because you give us practical advice. You know, I was listening to what you were saying, Doctor, and one of the things that struck me about what you said is that we have spent so much time as a medical community working on the virus itself and the symptoms of the illness that we've not spent enough time dealing with the anxiety and the depression. And it sounded to me like what you were saying is that we're behind the eight ball, and it's going to be difficult for us to catch up. Is that a fair assessment of what you were saying?
I think, in fairness to the world and the state of it, we have to prioritize, right? First things first. Right now we have to deal with the fact that there are people who are getting this virus and dying from it, and figuring out sort of both the acute medical as well as the sort of public health virus containment spread of things. So I think, we're on the right track there, but there's going to be consequences of this pandemic that go far beyond simply the acute infection itself. I mean, we're seeing people who have recovered from COVID have ongoing medical problems related to their infection. And similarly, I think, as you're pointing out, we're going to see groups of people who never got COVID, the virus, but who sort of got a reaction to all the stuff that's gone down around the virus, all the worry and all the loss of jobs, or even worrying about loss of jobs and the social isolation, and all of those things are absolutely going to and are having an effect. So that even if we could make the virus magically go away tomorrow, we're still going to be paying for this, and I don't necessarily mean specifically in dollars. I mean, as a society and emotionally, we're going to be recuperating from this experience for years to come. Think about 9/11. We're still talking about 9/11. We still have people who are traumatized by 9/11. I have one patient in particular who was to be on one of those flights and wasn't. This is an ongoing problem, and we're going to be facing the consequences of this illness, even in this non-biologic sense, for quite some time. And I think we have to kind of gird up for that experience and be prepared to deal with it as we finally, in the hopefully near to medium term future, get control of the virus itself. Then we're going to have to start, picking up the pieces, and we have to be prepared for that.
I absolutely agree with that. I want to ask you a follow-up question. If we look at the timeline of where we come from, when it first started to explode and expand, we had all kinds of outlandish predictions of mortality and death rates, and now we're 8 months into the, and we're seeing that actually the most vulnerable group that would have the highest percentage of mortality are elderly and people in nursing homes and people who have pre-existing conditions. But I think what you said there was so important, because even if you don't get it, you can get the fallout from it. And that's where I think that's where the anxiety and the depression is rising, is because people are wondering. And I think, doctors, I've been writing about this in commentary. I think there are a lot of Americans who don't understand that the vaccine is not going to cure people. It's not going to cure people who got the virus. It's simply a mechanism. And I think people think, okay, we get the virus, we're good to go. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. We in May we had 75% of the people said they would take the shot. Now we have an early September survey, 51% are interested in taking the shot. Now there are some people say that that's political, because some of the people on the left have been attacking the vaccine, but that also adds to the anxiety, and I think it's the well people that may have huge problems with the anxiety. And I wanted to go, are there particular styles, types of cannabis that would work in your practice that seems to have worked better than others in dealing with anxiety and depression?
No, and sort of the longer answer to that is the there's a lot of discussion about the different types or strains of cannabis that are out there, but we've never shown any actual difference in medical outcomes based on that. So when people say, well, what strain should I get? What I tell them is this. The strains really don't matter, and they're really a marketing tool that the industry has in order to keep people coming back and buying more and trying different things. What I tell my patients is that what you really want is sort of middle-of-the-road, medium-potency cannabis, right? And so, as you and the listeners know, a lot of the strains have super high THC content, 20 to 30, maybe even over 30% THC. And what we've learned scientifically is that while the THC is the main medicine, it doesn't work very well by itself, and it needs sort of the other chemicals that come with cannabis in order to do its job properly. And so the implication of that is that if you have a strain that has higher percentages of THC, then sort of by the definition of percentage, it has lower percentage of all those helpers. So we need something that kind of has the right balance. So I advise my patients to look for cannabis that has between 15 and 20% THC. And that is just sort of a general guideline and a way to choose a strain that isn't based on, the name or, some write-up written by your kid's friend or something like that, And within the bounds of that, I find that cannabis works pretty well regardless of its type.
Well, unfortunately, doctor, we're running out of time, so let's have you tell our audience how they can get a hold of you and your practice and take advantage of telemedicine that you offer.
Great, thank you. As you mentioned, we do a lot of telemedicine. In fact, we are exclusively telemedicine now in the time of COVID, and take care of patients throughout the U.S. and around the world. So if anybody's interested in reaching out to me, you can go to my website, which is inhalemd.com. Again, inhalemd.com. And we've got over 100 articles there written for everyday people that kind of give you an idea of where we can start. And then, of course, you can reach out to me through the website, and we'd be happy to schedule a consultation.
Thank you, Doctor, for joining us today in the conversation.
My pleasure.
Well, if you didn't hear all of this wonderful interview and advice from our cannabis doctor on call, Dr. Jordan Tischler, you can go to W420 Radio Network, go to the archive section, and you can listen to this and many of the appearances that Dr. Jordan has been on in the last year. And thanks for listening. We'll be right back. I'm going to reset. That was as good as the first time you did it.
No, thanks. I remember feeling like we did a great job on whatever it was Tuesday, but I can't remember any of what I actually said, which is just fine. So I'm glad that you're happy with it.
You're just an amazing talent. So you did a wonderful job. So now we're going to go and we're going to talk about your practice, how it's changed with 100% telemedicine, and closing your bricks and mortar, and then we're going to go into the professional association. Okay?
Sounds great. Yep.
Here we go. Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us today is our very own cannabis doctor on call, Dr. Jordan Tischler. Today I've asked him to speak about how his practice has changed because of COVID, and additionally, I want him to talk about the professional association that he is a founder. So welcome to the conversation, Doctor.
Oh, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So, Doctor, tell the audience how your practice has changed because of COVID-19.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Prior to COVID, I had not one but two offices serving different geographic areas. And when COVID came along, I sort of looked at that and thought, you know, I like sitting face-to-face with my patients and talking to them, but that's not really viable at this point anymore. And so, you know, I had dabbled with telemedicine for, you know, occasional patients, particularly ones who were essentially so sick that they couldn't make it to my office. And I had always felt like it was kind of a second choice compared to sitting together in the room. But under the circumstances, I said, look, this is the safe way to go. Let's see how it can work. And so we have completely converted to 100% telemedicine. And I have to say that I actually think it's pretty good. You know, it took me some time to adjust to adjust my style and to get comfortable with it. But in fact, you know, I do miss, you know, being in the same room with people, but there are other trade-offs that have turned out to be quite nice. For example, you know, because of the telemedicine, right, obviously it's convenient for people. They don't have to drive into my office and find parking. But really, I get to see people now in their home environments, where they live, where they're comfortable. And that helps me get to know them better and furthers our clinical connection. And I'll tell you a brief little story. I was seeing a woman who I'd seen for years. She has breast cancer. She's doing really well. And so we were talking, and she's sitting in her kitchen, and we were discussing her care. And her five-year-old son crawled up on her lap and said, "Mommy, I need snuggles." And that was a priceless moment, and you don't have that sort of thing in the office. So I've really found this to be a good trade-off. And, of course, because it's telemedicine, sort of by the nature of its telemedicine, this has really allowed me to expand the geography of my practice so that we're really no longer limited by geography at all. And I've been taking care of people from, you know, almost every state in the nation at this point, as well as countries outside of the U.S. And that, you know, makes me happy because I can then take good care of people and spread this the benefits to more people. So it's actually been a really good thing.
So let me ask a couple of follow-up questions. First of all, have you had any of your existing patients balk at having to do it by telemedicine?
You know, that's a very interesting subject. I have not had anyone balk at it in the sense of being uncomfortable with its effect on our relationship. That has been a non-issue. What has been an issue is that because I take care of mostly older folks, and also some people who, shall we say, are less wealthy, those two groups of folk often have more anxiety and or real difficulty around using the technology. And so I have been doing some more telephone medicine than I would like. And I still do think that that's not quite as good as being able to see each other face to face and kind of read the body language and the facial expressions. But, you know, at the end of the day, the thing that matters to me is being able to provide the kind of care that the patient needs. And so if that means I'm using the telephone instead of the telemedicine, then, you know, I do what we need to do. There is a slight issue, you know, on a regulatory basis. Permission, if you will, to use telemedicine during COVID is actually temporary. I've been sort of assured that permission will not go away when the various executive orders are rescinded. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to continue the telemedicine that way. The telephone becomes kind of dicey, and, you know, one really does have to be able to prove that you're maintaining the kind of standard of care that you want to provide. And so, you know, I'm working on that, and I think telemedicine is a great approach for what I do. You know, look, if I were a surgeon, it would be useless, right? But for what I do, it's a great tool. And yeah. I've given up
so
my
the second
office,
question.
I should mention, is that the brick and mortars, I let them go because this is so wonderful. And if somebody requires me to go back to a brick and mortar, then I'm going to be scrambling for space. But we'll worry about that
right.
if it happens.
Right. So the second question is, you kind of began to touch on the technology. Do you have any patients who don't have the technology as far as, forget their skills, do they have the video conferencing capability on their computers? Have you found anybody that just doesn't have it?
No, not really. And I think part of it is that at this point in history, even if people don't have a laptop, or some other sort of, you know, more traditional looking computer, they pretty much all have smartphones. And so with a smartphone, you can do all the same stuff, whether we're talking about Zoom or any of the more medically oriented one. You know, you either operate it through an app or through a browser. And so the technology really hasn't itself been the problem. I think a real problem has been that, you know, there are people who have smartphones who use them as dumb phones and really don't understand them, you know, their capabilities. And I think really mostly are afraid of it. And that's something that, you know, I don't understand personally in the sense that I've always embraced technology going back, you know, for decades. But I can certainly empathize with its, you know, being, you know, anxiety provoking for people. So my staff and I really try to kind of hold people's hands and walk them through the process of connecting. And generally speaking, it works. I mean, I would say that, you know, we're doing 99% of our visits through telemedicine quite successfully. And then there's this 1% where, you know, for one reason or another, it's not working out. And then, you know, everybody's comfortable with a telephone. So we've been doing that as the backup. It seems to be working just fine.
Terrific. I think it's just amazing what you're doing. In one of our previous episodes, Doctor, you talked about the importance of dealing with a medical professional, somebody like yourself, as opposed to a bud tender who may not necessarily have the skill or the expertise. And you stepped up to the plate and formed a professional organization for people like-minded with you who are cannabis medical professionals. We haven't talked about this. I'm not sure we've ever talked about it in depth at all the times you've been on, so I figured now's the time to do it. So tell us about the organization that you've formed.
So the organization is called the Association of Cannabis Specialists. And, you know, it came about because after I had established my practice, I had friends in this field who are not practicing clinicians, but researchers and folks like that, who used to sort of laugh at me and say, you know, Jordan, you're the only person who cares this much and really wants to take care of their patients. And frankly, I found that, you know, really concerning and somewhat offensive, even though it was meant kindly. And so I started to say, look, I can't be the only doctor out here who actually cares about their patients. It just can't be, right? So I started this organization with the idea of finding all of my colleagues, whether they're physicians or nurse practitioners or whatever other kind of clinician we're talking about, and really galvanizing everybody around this idea that just because it's cannabis or weed, man, right, doesn't mean that we need to throw away all of the important relationship that we have with our patients. And also, as we talked about in other segments, that, you know, there are right ways and less right ways of using this stuff, and we want to make sure that people get the best benefit and the least risk. And so we have now developed into an organization that's not just national in the U.S., but international. And we provide a lot of educational services for our members that include, you know, science and how to in various forms. We provide mentorship for people who are newer to this kind of medicine. And then we also are deeply involved sort of as a policy advocacy group, because what we realize is that in order for us to do this well, we need the government, whether we're talking about states or national, to really provide us the tools that we need in order to make sure that our patients are getting what they need and not getting their arms twisted and all that sort of thing. So we've been deeply active right. in that and providing guidance to the FDA and the DEA and the CDC, as well as state governments, and filing amicus briefs to various courts when things come up. So we've kind of had our fingers out there in trying to set policy or guide policy to support patients and their clinicians.
Well, we're almost out of time, and I have two more questions. The first question is, what type of person should become a member of your group?
What kind of practice? Good question. Well, you know, we're focused mostly on clinicians. So if somebody is not a clinician and they want to join, we certainly welcome them. And they would have access to all of the benefits, but, you know, of course, what that would be, you know, what that would be, how that would be meaningful to them is obviously a personal choice. But really
right.
what we're focused on is people who practice cannabis medicine as sort of a focus of their clinical life, and also people who, you know, might be a primary care doctor or neurologist who are not going to practice cannabis medicine, but who want to or feel the need to become educated so that they understand where cannabis fits as a tool for their patients, and then, you know, be able to refer to a trusted colleague who is a cannabis specialist. And so I think that there are sort of two groups of clinicians that we're really targeting that way.
You told me the last time you and I talked about this off air that your membership is growing rapidly.
Yes, and we're actually this month we're going to introduce a brand new website that's going to streamline membership administration and access to the various member benefits. We've also added a whole new slew of member benefits, including more educational resources, three new journals, a whole bunch of those sorts of things. So we're about to start a huge membership drive in this month, going on through the beginning of the year. And so I think, you know, the more we can reach out to clinicians and other interested parties, the more we can swell the ranks. That gives us more clout in Washington in particular.
Sure.
And obviously it disseminates the science and the information better to the clinicians and there through, you know, to their patients so that everybody's getting the benefit that they need.
We've been having a conversation with Dr. Jordan Tischler, our cannabis doctor on call. Doctor, tell us two things. How do people get a hold of you to talk about telemedicine, and how do they get a hold of you and your new group?
Great. Well, let's start with the group, the Association of Cannabis Specialists. The website is cannabis-specialist.org. I know it's a little bit of a mouthful, but again, it's cannabis-specialist.org. And as I mentioned, we have a website now, but the better one is coming shortly. So visit the website and then come back and visit the new website all this month. That would be awesome. Again, cannabis-specialist.org. And then if you want to reach me, you know, professionally, the best way to do that is through my website, which is inhalemd.com. Again, inhalemd.com. And you can reach out to me directly through there. There are also over 100 articles on various cannabis medicine topics for you to peruse. So I look forward to hearing from you.
As always, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for this wonderful insight and perspective. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
If you didn't hear all of this terrific interview with Dr. Jordan, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section and listen to this and other many appearances of Dr. Jordan on the show. We'll be right back. And we're done.
Awesome.
Thank you. It was just terrific. I think your professional organization is desperately needed. What I want to do is I want to follow up with a very, very brief discussion we had on the last situation about how we might work together to help you grow your membership. But I want to send you an email and try and figure out a time next week where the two of us can spend a little bit of time just talking about this issue. And let me tell you about some of the things that we think might help help grow your association and get deeper into the people that you want to talk to. So I will send you an email and we'll figure out something next week.
That sounds lovely. Awesome.
Thank you again. Thank you for bailing me out, and thank you for a wonderful show.
Listen, you know what they say happens, so I'm glad to be able to help. And, you know, congratulations again on making it through a year of this. It's not an easy business. Yeah, more power to you.
Thank you, sir. You take care. Thank you.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. End episode. Yes.